Today on The Grave Talks, the Bothell Hell House. I've talked to countless individuals, families, and investigators about their haunting encounters, and quite honestly, the story of the Bothell Hell House is one of the most terrifying I've ever heard. I can't recall a case where so many dark and seemingly demonic signs and actions were taken against the living with such force and hate. This is truly a stunning case about pure evil and its desire to wreak havoc on the lives of the living. In 2012, Keith Linder and his girlfriend moved into what seemed like any other normal house in the Seattle suburb of Bothell. The phenomena they witnessed and fell victim to was truly horrific. Dark and overwhelming interactions with unexplained forces would change their lives forever and leave many in the paranormal community perplexed and questioning how such extremes could happen to one family alone. This is their true story. The story of Keith Linder and the Bothell Hell House.
Me and my girlfriend found this house probably February, March of 2012 on Craigslist. And I emailed the homeowner. It was a rental. And he told us the house was still being lived in, but he put it out there because there's going to be a vacancy in May. He contacted us again about April, and we came in 2 weeks after that to view the house, look at the house, me and my girlfriend, and we qualified, and we moved in May 1st of 2012.
When you saw the house for the first time, did you get a chance to tour it? Did you get a chance to see it before you actually moved in, or how did that happen?
Yeah, he gave us a two-story house, so he gave us a tour of upstairs, downstairs. New house. I mean, the house was built in 2005. The neighborhood it sits in was built in 2005. It was one of those houses you just have to fall in love with the minute you see it. And yeah, he gave us a tour. It was empty. It was moved out. And within about 2 weeks, we moved in.
So to anybody, it would just feel like a normal, you know, fairly modern, fairly new house. Is that what the vibe you were getting?
Yeah, new house, new neighborhood. I mean, it was almost cookie cut cliche. The kids are outside on tricycles playing hopscotch, and you got this nice house. And we have no kids. We have no pets. It's a fairly big house. I think it's 4 bedrooms, 2.5 bath. And we both liked it. We both got excited about it. And yeah, when he told us that he would like for us to live there, yeah, we were ecstatic.
So nothing feeling weird about this at all. It was a happy time. It was, hey, we're getting this house. This is going to be great. Nice neighborhood, nice house, nice people, all that. Nothing weird.
Yeah, no vibe, no weird energy, no, hey, a door just slammed downstairs or something to make us be like, what? But no, totally, I mean, the ghosts per se were just shutting up at that time.
Yeah, not even on the radar of what you were thinking. So you get into the house, you move in. How is life? What transpires at the beginning?
Well, interesting enough, what transpired happened on the day we got the keys to the house. We haven't even moved in yet. May 1st, we come in to sign the papers, and the homeowner gives us the keys, shows us the house again, tells us the lay of the land, and then he leaves. So now it's just me and my girlfriend in this empty house. And we've never been in the house by ourselves before, so we're once again excited. But we're sitting down on the carpet in the living room talking about which room is going to be used for what. And just out of the blue, in the middle of our conversation, we hear a kid cough. And it was very weird. It echoed. The house is empty. There's no lights or power on, so things can pretty much bounce off any wall it wants to. And it was very real because Tina looked at me, I looked at her, and we both said at the same exact time, I kid you not, was that a kid cough? And it sounded like, I mean, it should sound like it was a kid in a room somewhere. That's how real it sounded. I mean, you would almost want to stop what you're doing and go investigate because you would think, oh, somebody's here. But we didn't do that. We just shrugged it off because that noise had to have come from outside, even though it felt very close to us. So we shrugged it off. A week or two later, we're moving in and just started noticing objects missing. My first set of car keys disappeared. These are my spare keys that I had tucked away in a glove compartment box. And Tina started noticing her jewelry. And she would come ask me, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen that? I would say no. And then we both started noticing at the same time our silverware. I mean, we constantly were finding ourselves looking for silverware in the morning or night when we have dinner. And it seems like our supply of fork, knives, and spoons were lessening. So that was kind of interesting. But once again, we're not connecting the dots. We're just thinking, because we've only been in the house a short period of time, things get lost during the move. You know, things just get lost. And maybe over time, they would just start reappearing, you know, like normal moving things normally reappear. But then about 2 months in, we're watching TV, me and Tina in the living room, or the den, I should say. And Tina has this plant, it's like a 4-foot-tall plant that stands next to the entertainment center. It stands on the floor. And as we're watching Netflix, all of a sudden this plant rises up into the air, darts up into the air, and does a 360-degree spin, and then keels over and falls to the floor. And we're looking at the TV, so you can't miss it. I mean, it's sitting right next to the television. And we saw it at the same time, and me and Tina looked at each other again, and we like had that look of, did that just happen? And I kid you not, we really thought we were being pranked or punked or fooled, or this is a tenant's teenage son or daughter who's pranking the new tenants. We really thought somebody was really having a good time at our expense. So we rushed over to the plant looking for a remote control device, wire, string, anything that would be like, aha, okay, fun is over. And we didn't find none of that. And we looked at each other again, and that's when it rung a bell in our heads of, I think we have a ghost here.
And what was your thought process at that point? I mean, what was your thoughts on ghosts at that point? That should really be the first question. Did you believe in ghosts? What was going through your mind?
I was always 50-50. I mean, I know ghost stories. I've never had the experience prior to this house. I like a good scary story every now and then, like everybody else. My thought process then and there was, okay, if we have a ghost, it obviously has to be friendly because look what's happened so far. Because me and Tina immediately went back to the kid cough and the items missing. And keep in mind, we're also now at this stage, items are appearing in the house that neither one of us own. So we're having kid toys disappear out of nowhere, or you wake up in the morning, come downstairs, there's a kid toy on the staircase, coffee table, kitchen countertop. So we're starting to think, okay, we have a kid ghost. This is a friendly ghost. That's the only ghost I know at the time. And it was just weird. And we went to the internet. I mean, we have no experience with ghosts, what to do if you have one. So we just start Googling kid ghosts. What does that mean? And the internet tells you various things. Oh, kid spirits are friendly. They're lost. They're confused. Maybe a kid died in the house. Maybe a kid died on the street outside or whatever. And you have to be nice to them, be friendly, and try to help them into the light. And that's the advice we were getting from the internet, and by internet, I mean paranormal sites.
Sure. And so you're thinking, you know, if anything, this is just, it's like a child, like a living child. You want to be helpful. You're the adult. You're trying to help whatever this is, or this kid, get to wherever it's going. What transpired after that?
Well, we tried, like you said, Tina is a mother. Her kids are grown. They live elsewhere. But we tried to do the parenting thing with the kid or with the child. And everything we tried seemed to have a negative effect. And by negative effect, I mean we would talk in the direction we thought the spirit was. Like, hey, you know, this is Keith and Tina's home. You're sort of welcome here, but, you know, you need to go into the light. Follow the light. Is there anything you want? Why are you here? And then the response would be a loud bang, like boom, boom, boom. And you cannot pinpoint the direction this bang came from, except it came from within the house. And you were like, oh, okay, that's not the response we were promised from reading on the internet. Okay, maybe we're doing this wrong. So we would try again in different parts of the house. And the response would always be loud bangs. Till now, one night, I think Tina was upstairs. I was downstairs, and she was watching TV in bed. And I hear this loud bang, but this time it's not the spirit. It's the door slam to the master bedroom. I rush upstairs and Tina's all frantic. She's like, that door just slammed on its own. That door just slammed on its own. Oh my God, I was in bed and that door just slammed. And that point on is when more door slams, more loud bangs, and then pottery. I mean, we're talking pottery like flower plants. All of Tina's just started flying left and right in the house. And I look at Tina and I'm like, I don't think this is a kid ghost, but what else can you do? I mean, we went back to the internet, start talking to family and friends, and the advice is pretty much the same. Well, get the house blessed. We did that. Try to do some research on the house, the property. We did that. See if anybody died in the house. And then the ultimate of smudging and saging, which I might tell you had a grossly negative effect, because the activity would just escalate. I mean, by escalate, the objects that were being thrown were now larger. We're going from pottery to bar stool to iron and ironing board. And keep in mind, the iron and ironing board are being thrown while you're asleep. I mean, you're sleeping and you got an iron or ironing board at the foot of the bed or whatever in your room, and you hear this loud crash. You wake up, turn the lights on. Your iron board was once over here. It's now over there. So, yeah, that was pretty unnerving.
I mean, how are you guys handling this at that point? I mean, this is almost kind of getting, even if these things are not being thrown directly at you, I mean, the thought's got to be going through your mind that there's a physical danger here, possibly.
Yeah, and that's when the iron and iron board, when objects start being thrown within our vicinity, like they're thrown to get our attention as well as to unnerve us. Keep in mind, we had a interesting housewarming party 2 to 3 months after we moved in, and we had friends over, and they start seeing objects thrown. Tina's friends, when the party was over, stayed behind and helped us clean up. And they saw plants fly left to right. So, yeah, we were started to equate that. I don't think this spirit, number one, is friendly. I don't think it likes us being here. But we maintain a calm demeanor, me and Tina. We were frantic when the activity broke out, especially while sleeping. But at the same time, we would rush to the situation and discern it and say, there's got to be a logical explanation to mitigate to where we lessen the activity. Because that's the advice we've been given by clergy, by priests, by churches, and by our friends. Nobody's screaming yet, run for the hills. Even though you feel like you want to do that when a large object goes whizzing by you. But yeah, it was very unnerving. I then told Tina one night, after a door slammed while we were both chit-chatting in bed, the bedroom door slammed on us as a means of telling us to shut up. I looked at her and I'm like, I don't think the house is haunted, or I don't think they're haunting the house. I think they're haunting us. you know, because everything that we witness and see seems to be deliberate. I mean, most haunted houses that I understand, you go in, you hear a crook, a cranny, a noise, the house is haunted, you know, but these things are happening in the rooms that we're in. It's like they're trying to unnerve us, and at that time we didn't know why.
And this is a rental, correct? So you don't actually own the property.
Yeah, this is a rent. Yeah, okay. Yeah, this is a rental. We signed a 2-year rental agreement. Yep.
So, did at any point at the beginning here, did you reach out to the person you're renting from, the landlord, and say, "Hey, plants are flying around and other stuff is flying around the house"?
I did. I did not tell them plants were flying. Because we're relatively new to the paranormal. We really like the house, and I really didn't want him to lose confidence in his tenants by saying, "Hey, we got plants flying here, dude." And the guys think, "Oh, these guys are crazy. Yeah. Well, who have I brought into my home?" But I did, because I'm a PM manager, and I know how to ask questions and get an answer. So I asked the question, like the house. I just had some questions. Was there ever anything going on at the house? Did any previous tenant ever speak to you about weird noises? And he replied, "Weird noises? Like what? What are you talking about?" Like occasional bang here and there coming out the attic. I was trying to feed him a little information to see would he divulge any information, but he kept it pretty close to the chest, because he would be like, "No, my previous tenant said the house was fine, nothing. You want me to bring somebody up there and inspect the attic? Maybe there's a raccoon up there." I'm like, "Oh yeah, sure. If you can do that, and that'd be great." And then I asked, "Well, how about previous tenants? Anybody ever come to you? Any deaths? Anything extreme?" And he's like, no. So we talked in those terms. And then as the activity escalated, I started keeping documentation of when activity would break out. I started photographing, putting up cameras, installing a security system, because now we're midsummer of that same year. We're waking up, me and Tina, and sometimes the front door is open, or all the kitchen cabinet doors are open, or the garage doors open. So I had ADT security come in and set up a state-of-the-art home monitoring on every window and every door in the house, and did that as a means of, okay, we need to know what doors are open, when and where. And every time a door opens or closed, a little AI voice comes on that says front door open or back door open if me or Tina are leaving the house to say dump the trash or something. But that really helped us have somewhat of a peace of mind, because it did stop the doors, front doors and back doors, from being open when you wake up in the morning. But more electronics was brought in by me as a means of trying to capture the phenomena, because I knew the damage, and the damage was starting to be done to the house. I'm going to have some explaining to do to the owner, because now we got objects flying, and when they hit the walls, they're leaving golf ball size holes in them.
Yeah. So when you put the security monitoring up, it slowed down the occurrences, or the frequency of the occurrences of the things happening?
Yes and no. It slowed down some. And by some, I mean the front door and the back door or garage door being open. I mean, you sleep, it's a two-story house. You get up to go to work in the morning. The last thing you want to see when you come down for coffee is your front door wide open. I mean, that's just the ultimate vulnerability. I mean, and that happened a lot. And so it stopped that, because spirits were like, "Well, he's got the AD security system. It's going to tell him the minute we pop open the door." But it did not stop the other phenomena, and actually it made some escalate, because I know now what I didn't know then. Once I started putting cameras in the home, that was just more toys for the spirits. I mean, you're talking about electrical equipment. They started manipulating those, stealing them, unplugging them, turning them around. And some were just outright taken, and are still missing to this day.
Wow. So you get the cameras up, and you start monitoring this stuff, there's a shift in the paradigm of exactly what's happening, but what continues on in the house after that?
The late summer of 2012, loud bangs, more objects being thrown, shadowy figures out the corner of your eye, door slams, and believe it or not, the first Bible, the one that caught fire in 2014, went missing actually late summer, early fall of 2012, because one of the advices given was we have to display our religious beliefs openly. We're going to get these spirits out of here. We need to be more proactive in our religious paraphernalia. So I started putting Bibles that I own, I didn't go out and buy them, I already own these Bibles, out on coffee tables, on bookshelves. And that had a negative effect because it would throw them down, hurl them across the room. I'm talking about the Bibles or the candles or the crosses. And then one night, Tina was out of town on business, and I put one of the Bibles on the lamp table in the living room downstairs, and I went to bed. Well, when I woke up that morning to go to work, the first thing when I walked out of my bedroom was look toward that table, and the Bible was gone. I mean, this is August, September of 2012. And a few months after that, the activity in the entire house just died down. I mean, we had zero activity. Everything tapered off about a few months after the Bible went missing. And believe it or not, all of 2013, there was no activity that I could, you know, wave a candle at. There was really nothing to really say something is still here. It felt like it at times, but nothing physical. And we thought we won. We thought we had won the battle. If all I lost was a car key and Tina's jewelry and silverware and a Bible, then we came out good. High five.
Yeah. At what moment here did you make the realization, or maybe you didn't yet, that there's something, you know, there's the world of ghosts, which seem to be people, you know, the thought first was it was a child, but, you know, they were people at one time, to something a lot more sinister, possibly demonic, where it's being offended by a Bible. What was that moment where you're like, okay, I don't think this is a ghost of a person. I think this might be something darker.
That was the night, that's a good question. That was the night the first Bible went missing in 2012. Before I laid the Bible out, my coworkers and family and friends advised me, you need to sage the house more. I went out and brought a sage stick and came home and smudged the upstairs and downstairs. And I kid you not, when I walked out of my bedroom with the sage stick lit, I got to the landing, and all of a sudden, the front door opened on its own, and I don't mean gradually, I mean opened wide, and then slammed immediately shut. And I saw that with my own two eyes from the landing, because I can look straight into my doorway from where I'm standing. I knew then, I always had the feeling that we were not alone in the home, but when I saw the front door open and shut, that sent the message home to me that there's something nefarious here, because that was a lot. Me, I'm a big guy. I couldn't slam the door that hard the way I just witnessed. It rattled the whole house. The message that seemed to be sent from that door opening and closing was, we don't approve of you saging. We didn't authorize it. And there's going to be a price to pay. And I did stop saging after that. I set the sage stick down and migrated to the Bible and put the Bible on the lampstand. And I kid you not, the next morning the Bible was gone. And then 2 months after that, the activity sort of tapered off.
Yeah.
And me and Tina always had a discussion in 2013 of, are they here? Are they dormant? Did we win? Did we kick them out? Tina was more inclined to think, I hope we won. I hope we kicked them out. me, because I'm just wired and analytical that way, I cannot pinpoint to anything we did specifically that would have kicked them out, but a victory is a victory, right? But it was still keeping me up at night as to saying, well, what finally made them leave? And I kid you not, when they came back in 2014, they came back with a vengeance and they bought their friends.
What happened in 2014? What was the first sign that they were back?
Well, January 2nd of 2014, I had a mysterious fall down the stairs, so bad that I tore my right patella tendon. I was coming downstairs for a glass of water, and I can't remember whether I was pushed or slipped. EVPs 2 years later revealed that the spirits pushed me, because we got that on EVP where they admitted to doing so. But I was laid up from January up until March of that year. So now I'm homebound, I'm upstairs bound, Tina's going to work, and I'm in a cast, leg straight, and I started hearing these noises in the house, like I heard in 2012, like somebody rummaging through the kitchen, somebody going from bedroom to bedroom, closing doors, opening doors. This is right outside my bedroom, mind you. And then, I kid you not, around mid-March to early April, me and Tina were asleep one night. The house felt really dense. It felt really, I mean, the mood of the whole house had changed. And we were sleeping, and all of a sudden we hear this loud crash. I mean, it felt like a plane had just come through the roof. But the noise was right outside our door. It's in the hallway. So we rush out. And there's this armoire that sat in the hallway. It's one of Tina's. And it's now on the other side of the hallway. This armoire has been thrown from one side of the hall to the other. And it's, you know, it left a gash in the wall based on the fact that it landed and penetrated the wall. And then after that night, matter of fact, the bangs are back. Boom, boom, boom. Plants being thrown. I mean, we're back to where we left off in 2012. Light fixtures, you know, you have the light fixtures, those porcelain domes over the light bulbs, exploded. You're talking about bar stools and chairs being thrown again, chairs sliding across the floor, the stomping, the knocking, a lot of knocking behind the wall, on the wall, ceiling. But I mean, the most horrible thing for sound wise is those loud bangs. I mean, they're very loud, and you can almost set your watch to them, because they would happen after 8 p.m. almost every night. And friends would come over, some never came back, but you would hear these bangs. And yeah, they were back now. They were back. They were mad, and that's when we started contacting paranormal teams. Mm-hmm. The activity got so bad. It's called the Katy Perry Weekend. There's a portion of my book where I describe the Katy Perry Weekend, where you have from Friday to Sunday this unrelenting activity. And the reason why I call it Katy Perry Weekend is because that Friday night, I was in my office, and Tina, I believe, was downstairs, and the TV in our bedroom was coming on. And every time it came on playing that Katy Perry song titled Dark Horse. Go figure.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know the lyrics to that song, but the verse, it kept playing over and over, because we came to the bedroom, TV's on, playing music. I look at Tina, did you turn the TV on? No, I came in the room after you did. I turn the TV back off. We go back to our respective places. 5 minutes later, TV comes on again. It's playing the same song. I look at Tina, she look at me. I knew then, oh, the ghosts are doing this. This is paranormal related. So I turn the TV off and I unplug it. All right, that'll stop that. Mr. Ghost, do something now. Go back to my office. Tina goes back downstairs. 5 minutes later, the TV comes on, blasting again the Katy Perry song. going to the bedroom. TV's not even plugged in now. Okay? The cord is laying on the floor, and music and Katy Perry is blasting through the TV, and it's playing the lyrics, Dark Horse, for, you know, this, we're talking about 15 minutes has now transpired, and the only part that is playing of that song, or when the TV comes on, is, are you ready for the perfect storm? The lyrics go something to the effect of, are you ready for the perfect storm? The perfect storm. It's about to be on now, because once you're mine, there's no turning back. And that's what it was singing through the TV. And that was Friday night. And I looked at Tina, she looked at me, I'm like, something's gonna go down. This is, and it did. Friday night, Saturday night. Saturday was so bad, that's when we had to get in contact with the paranormal team, who did come out to the house Sunday. We finally reached somebody Sunday after all that activity. I'm talking about explosions, objects being thrown, loud bangs, very little sleep, and the house was a mess. I mean, it was broken glass. You have to almost wear steel-toed boots to walk through the house. And this team came over Sunday, and things sort of quailed down. But Sunday night, early Monday morning, if there ever was an icing on the cake of Katy Perry weekend, it would have to be 1:34 a.m. Monday, because me and Tina are asleep and the fire alarm in the house goes off.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Keith Linder about the Bothell Hell House. We're just getting started. Don't miss part two as we continue our conversation and ask the question to Keith of how did he have so much patience to stay in the house? Was there any evidence found as to why this house felt so demonic? What was it like when Keith talked to the clergy about his experience? And what was the land before the house was built? And why might something not want humans to live there? What happened to Keith and his girlfriend mentally as the dark forces went into overdrive? How did the demonic force set fire to a Bible and cross at the same time? And were the dark spirits ever removed from the home? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.